Hey, Nehemiah chapter 6. Thanks to the worship team this morning, acoustic day at Heritage of Faith. That was fun. So we're on Nehemiah chapter 6, and we've had a lot of trouble with the leaders of the surrounding, I don't know, villages or communities or kingdoms or whatever they're called. Trying to get in the way of the mission, and I think today has a wonderful lesson for us. You know, a lot of people have missions. A lot of people have missions that they want you to be a part of. Some are particularly good at recruiting. Others not so. But the mission that you decide to take on will determine what you need to know, will determine what you need to know today, and that will determine what you're going to do today. What you decide your life is all about is going to end up driving what you want, what information you want to go get, and what you want to go do. You know, there's a great sales technique, I'm sure you're all aware of it, that if I can get you thinking about the problem I want you to think about, that leads you to my solution that I have for you, then I can get you, you know, I can get you onto my product. What you need to be doing is thinking about the value of your house. Your house has never been worth more than it is today, and it's changing every day. You need to be thinking about maybe selling. I can help you with that, right? You need to be thinking about the decreasing availability of beautiful cars like this one. It's every day. There are fewer and fewer cars out there to buy because of, you know, chip shortages and automotive. Blah, blah, blah. You need to be thinking about getting one of these beauties before they're gone. You need to be thinking about crime in your neighborhood because it keeps going up every day. And there are a variety of security options that you can think about, and I can help you with that, right? If I can get you thinking about the issue I want you to think about, I can drive what you do. Is the rain going to get through your roof? Now I'm causing anxiety. Isn't this the perfect time for the roofers to go advertising, right? If I can get you thinking about the crisis I want you to think about, then I can drive what you see as your mission for now. Vacations are wonderfully simple when it comes to missions. And I think it's one of the reasons that I really like them. The mission you have on a vacation is very straightforward. And if you can remember it each day, what your mission is for today, then you know what to get up and do, right? For me, it inevitably ends up, you need to get up and hurry up and eat breakfast. For Valerie, not so much, usually sometimes other things, but for me, it's like, you need to get up and hurry up and eat breakfast. Now that I can handle. Then usually it's, you need to look at the map for some reason or another to figure out how to drive where you're going to drive or get gas or load the car. But I love the simplicity of the mission that you have when you're on a vacation. And when the guy stops by and says, you need to think about crime in your neighborhood, you're like, no, I need to get up and eat breakfast real quick because we're going to go somewhere, right? You're focused. And something about this, the whole process of being away and being on a vacation focuses you on a mission. Now, let's think about Nehemiah's time. There's more than one person that has a mission here. There's lots of stuff going on, right? What is Satan doing in Nehemiah's time? He's discouraging families that are trying to build their portion of the wall. He's rousing up the nations and these villages and kingdoms all around him, causing trouble. There's a famine. Yeah, that's a problem. Satan's brewing up trouble because there's a famine. There's debt and slavery for families. We just talked about it in the last week or two. We have children of Israel can't buy food, so they're selling properties and things like that to get money. And we have the richer folks of the children of Israel enslaving the poorer ones, taking advantage of all this. We have all that going on. We have people like Tobiah, Sanballat, can't remember the other one's name, hanging around discouraging the builders. You have no realistic chance of finishing this wall, I tell them. And if you do, even the little critters from the forest, the foxes and whatever, they're going to be able to knock it down. Because does any of you know anything about masonry? Right? You just have a bunch of families out here throwing rocks in a pile, I'm sure is what they might have said. You don't really know what you're doing. Any fox that comes out of the forest is going to be knock it all down. It's really never going to work. Okay, all this is going on. This is all dust in the air. What is God doing? It's really simple. What is God doing? He's building a wall. He's building a temple. He's building a nation of people who know how to work together. And he's building families. That's what he's doing, right? What do you focus on? Satan has lots of things he wanted Nehemiah to focus on. But what do you focus on? What Satan's agenda is, or what God's agenda is? The key is to keep the apparent success of Satan's agenda from discouraging you or discouraging us to stop working on God's agenda. Satan's agenda seems to always have an apparent success. By the way, in the middle, in this Nehemiah story, in spite of the fact that all of this is going on and they keep discouraging the builders, in the last chapter they got the wall built to half high all the way around. So they're plodding along and succeeding. But when you look out, I'm sure, if you were living there, when you look out and you read the newspaper or whatever that is they had that day, or listened to the village messengers or whatever of the day, you would have the impression that Satan's agenda is winning. The key is to not let the apparent success of Satan's agenda discourage us so much that we stop working on God's agenda, which is exactly what Satan wants to happen. All right, 2021. What is Satan doing right now? That's easy. They come to your mind, right? Satan is making people sick again. He's oppressing people. He's taking away people's freedoms. He's succeeding in reducing church attendance. Been going on for a while. He is weakening economies and destroying businesses. He's breeding unrest and rebellion and just anger. He's breeding anxiety and depression and confusion, and probably more than any of all that, hopelessness. This is your homework assignment, really. What is God doing right now? And more important, I think, well, not more important, but more specific that I'm getting at today, what is God giving you to do? What is the mission that he's giving you? What is God doing? I think it's good to focus on those things as we can find them. But the thing I really want to focus on today is, what is God giving you to do? What is your purpose for getting up in the morning? What is it that's worth sacrificing for you that he is calling you to do? And I think Nehemiah gives us a good object lesson in this. And I'm sending you to the presence of God to find out this answer. I'm not going to try to answer this. If you're waiting for the answer, I'm not actually going to try to answer it specifically for you, because I think the answer is going to be between you and God, or between you and your spouse and God. And it's going to be something that he's going to show you. You know, in the presence of God, all these kind of things get answered. Do you remember the story of Mary and the disciples? At the beginning of Jesus' ministry, the wedding's going on, and they're running out of wine. And what did Mary tell the disciples to do? Go find Jesus. Whatever he tells you to do, do it. She trusted whatever he was going to say was going to be the right thing for you to do right then. That's essentially what I'm doing. Find the place of the presence of God. Sit in the presence of God. We were during the worship time, it kept coming back to me, this that I'm saying now, that Laura was and James were talking about. Sit in the presence of God. Let him speak to you and find out, what is it he's giving you? What is it he's telling you to do? And then do it. Really simple. So let's read this sort of object lesson from Nehemiah, starting in chapter 6, verse 1. Jeff, I'm trying to remember how Jeff pronounces this guy's name. Sanballat, right? Okay. That happened when Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, the Arab, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had rebuilt the wall and that there were no breaks in it, though at the time I had not hung the doors. This is rebuilt the wall to the half height we were talking about, so that there are no breaks all the way around. That Sanballat and Geshem sent to me saying, come, let us meet together among the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me harm. So I sent a messenger to them saying, I am doing a great work so that I cannot calm down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and go down to you? But they sent this message four times, and I answered in the same manner. They have an agenda. We need to talk. Come on, talk to us. I'm building a wall. No, no, you need to come out and talk to us. No, I'm building a wall. Hey, Nehemiah, there's something you need to focus on. Sanballat News gets up in the morning, and they start spreading the news. The Sanballat News. Here's the big story for today. The big story for today is, after four cordial invitations, Nehemiah still refuses even to talk to the leaders of the neighboring villages. He says he's, and I quote, too busy. Word on the street, Twitter, whatever, is that the villagers in the provinces surrounding are getting frustrated. There are growing fears that in behind the walls there is a brewing rebellion against the king, and they're going to set up their own empire and their own religion. They're trying to change the agenda. They're trying to force Nehemiah to think about their agenda and not the agenda that he was given by God, the mission he was given by God to do. So then Sanballat sent his servant to me as before the fifth time, this time with an open letter in his hand. And it was written, it is reported among the nations, and Geshem says, that you and the Jews plan to rebel. Therefore, according to these rumors, you are rebuilding the wall, and that you may be king. And you have also appointed prophets to proclaim concerning you at Jerusalem, saying, there is a king in Judah. Now these matters will be reported to the king, meaning the real king. So come, therefore, let's have a talk. Let's consult together. Now they're putting the screws to him. He's actually making these guys very nervous, and they're getting more desperate. They're seeing the walls getting built. They tried this, you're never going to finish it. And this thing about the foxes, and it's not working. Now they're getting a little more desperate because they don't want these walls to be finished. Of course, if it becomes a permanent city, these guys are going to have to live with it, right? They're starting to get the picture. If it becomes a permanent city, they're going to have to live with it. And so they decided they may as well, they better act now and rough up Nehemiah a little bit. Seems to be their plan, at least. Scare him. At the very least, ruin his reputation, which is what they're trying to do. Or ruin his health, whichever comes easier. And Nehemiah smells it coming. So they try to goad him into coming out. This open letter, we don't probably really hear about these that so much these days. Open letter means a letter to you that anyone can read. Today we'd call it Twitter. they put it out for everyone to see, but it was addressed to a certain person. And so they're trying to tell everyone around, here is what we think is going on. And actually the truth is not that was not his motivation at all. So there was God's plan, and then there was Satan's plan. Sometimes Satan's attempt to get a hold of the agenda can be very convincing. Sometimes it can be very hard to avoid. I think that Nehemiah gives us a good example and how he responds to this. It happens in verse 8, 9, and 10. Then I send back to him saying, no such things as you say are being done, but you invent them in your own heart, for they are all trying to make us afraid, saying their hands will be weakened in the work, and it will not be done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. He gave them back a short answer, told them it wasn't true. He prayed, God, for help, and he went back to the job. There's one lesson that I think for us in this is to keep your eyes on God's agenda, which is for us the real main thing, because there's always other people who would love to give us the things that we should think about. And don't let the distractions set our own personal agenda. God's mission should set our agenda. What was God's mission for Nehemiah? We just said it earlier. Build a wall. Protect the people. Build the temple. Make an environment where people can raise families. His agenda was not to negotiate good relationship with the people in the surrounding villages. It might have seemed like a reasonable thing to do. The surrounding villages thought maybe it was a good idea to do, but that's not what he was there to do. You see, militarily, this is a race. Just think about it. When you think about the military objective of what he's doing, this is a race. And they built it in, 52 days. Get the walls up before they can organize an attack against you, because the attack is going to be 10 times harder with the walls there than without them. And a little gap makes a big difference. Get them up, then we'll talk, if we're going to talk at all, right? So militarily, this makes a lot of sense. And haste is an essential part of this mission. It isn't just build a wall. It's build a wall now and fast and not delay. That's why Nehemiah keeps saying, no, it matters that I'm focusing on this right now. The work can't stop. So, moving on, more in the story, starting in chapter 10. Afterward, I came to the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was a secret informer. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. Indeed, at night, they will come to kill you. So it's not clear from this passage, but what's happening here is he's presenting himself as a friend. Hey, Nehemiah, I'm on your side. You're in danger. You're in physical danger. You know what? What's the strongest place in the city? We don't have a castle. We don't have a keep. We don't have that, but we do have a very strong temple. It's a pretty tough building to get into. It has doors. And come with me. Let's go into it. We'll protect you. You can stay in there for a while. Before we go on, should Nehemiah do this? There's a couple reasons why not. One is it wasn't his place to go and take control of the temple. He wasn't the priest. That wasn't his role. And that's why later on you see him saying, I shouldn't fall into sin. You're like, what was sin here? The sin would have been to take over the role of the priest and to sort of take possession of the temple. That would have been wrong for him for that reason. But the second is, it wasn't his mission right now to keep himself alive at all costs. It was his mission, remember, build the wall, build the temple, protect the families. That was his mission. Haste is everything. If he goes hiding and tries to get into a defensive posture before the walls are finished, he's just delaying the project, and that gives his enemies time. After the wall is halfway high all around, now the enemies have to crawl over it. But it's only a half wall. If it's all the way tall, then it's a very tough thing to get in. And now the attack on Nehemiah comes from a seemingly different direction. It comes from one who appears to be his friend. It comes from one who's trying to appeal to him as he's on his side. It turns out he wasn't. But it comes from a different direction, yet as an attack as well. And those building the wall, if you think about it, those building, putting rocks upon and up on the other, they're not putting safety first either. They're having to build a wall with a sword in their hand, right? And in fact, half the people, it says in one of the passages, half the people are on the defense duty and watching the other half for building. So it's not a safety first project, and Nehemiah needs to not think that way himself. Verse 11, he says, should such a man as I flee? And who is there such as I who would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Verse 12, and then I perceived that God had not sent him at all, and that he pronounced this prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this reason he was hired, that I should be afraid and act that way and sin, so that they might have cause for an evil report and that they might reproach me. Turned out this concerned citizen was not on the same side as he, as it looked like. Then Nehemiah prays for these guys. My God, verse 14, remember Tobiah and Sanballat according to their works, and the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets who have made me afraid. It's not always a good thing when Nehemiah prays for you. He says to remember them, remember them according to their works. He doesn't mean for God to bless them. He means for God to remember what they did. Actually, this is not the first time Nehemiah prays for the troublemakers. It was back a couple chapters before. In chapter 4, he says, hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach upon their own heads and give them as plunder to the land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity, nor let their sin be blotted out from them, meaning forgotten. For they have provoked you to anger before the builders. When you're causing trouble, you don't particularly want Nehemiah to pray for you. But he prays for these guys. Actually, personally, I find this comforting. Because prayers like this have gone through my head for people that were in my life or in my world, and I always wondered if they were biblical prayers. Well, now I have a biblical reference, and I have to admit, I have actually prayed these prayers, almost quoted them word for word, for certain situations. Now, don't get me mistaken. I don't mean that I'm praying that people are destroyed. I don't mean that I'm praying that people are killed. I don't mean that I'm praying that they wouldn't find God. I actually pray that they would find the Lord. What I'm praying for is God has a mission, and they have a mission. And in this particular case, their mission is so contrary to God's mission that actually if they succeed, God's mission will fail. They have actually set themselves very specifically and precisely against God's mission. So I pray that they fail. Because I pray that God's mission succeeds. But I'll also pray that they are turned, that their hearts are turned. Because I don't really want evil for them. But I don't want God's mission to fail. And I think that it's justified to pray that they would fail. And this passage in Nehemiah is to me a real comfort. And I know that I'm not the only one that's thought that. Thank you, Nehemiah, for your transparency here. So God's plan progresses, now verse 15, and they come to a great milestone. So the wall was finished on the 20th day of Elul in 52 days. And it happened when all our enemies heard it and all the nations around us saw these things. They were very disheartened in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was done by our God. So great victory. It changes the whole political landscape there. However, in verse 17, we see that stirring up division is still Satan's specialty, and sometimes victory doesn't stop that. Also in those days, the nobles of Judah sent out many letters to Tobiah, and letters to Tobiah came to them. So inside Jerusalem, there are the nobles, the rich and influential ones, and he's saying they're writing letters and receiving letters, they're corresponding with Tobiah. For many in Jerusalem were pledged to him. They had some kind of agreements, treaties, or whatever, because he was son-in-law of Sennacheriah, the son of Era, the son of Jehohanan, who had married the daughter of somebody else. So apparently there was some linkage in the families, in the family lines of these nobles and Tobiah. So they were sympathetic to him. Some of them were sympathetic to him, and they would write letters and get letters back and kept this correspondence going on with him. Verse 19, and they reported his good deeds before me and reported my words to him. And Tobias sent letters to frighten me. What does this mean is they would come to Nehemiah and say, you know, Tobiah did a really nice thing. Did you hear about, you know what he gave or how he helped the poor in his village or how he did this or that? And he should, he's not as bad as you think he is. And he's got all these people who are supposed to be his friends and are within his city. They're always stirring this up and encouraging him to think more differently about Tobiah. So to me, the message for us is a reminder that even in victory, divisions can sometimes remain. Satan is particularly adept at stirring up divisions. And when he's doing it, they seem to come from everywhere at once. And this doesn't mean you failed. Nehemiah succeeded at the mission he was given, at least this portion of it. It was a great success. The wall was built. Just because everybody's happy doesn't mean that they failed. Just because everybody's not happy doesn't mean that they failed. It just meant that not everyone understood the significance of the victory. I want to get to, I'm reorganizing my sermon here. I want to get to kind of, so how do we find out what God's mission is for us? Like I said at the beginning, I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I am going to do what Mary did, essentially, and send you to the presence of Jesus, and I trust and I believe that he will tell you. And whatever it is he tells you, my recommendation is do that. God does have an agenda for you. And sometimes we've forgotten it. Sometimes we never really clearly understood what it was. Satan has a lot of other things he wants you to think about, a lot of other distractions. And sometimes it seems like it's your intellectual duty to think about them. Sometimes it seems it's your moral duty or whatever that you must think about them. The one thing that you must keep in your mind is what mission God gave you. That's what you have to keep in the forefront. And for many of us, I'm encouraging us that it's a time to remember what that is. And if we don't know what it is, to seek in the presence of God to find what it is. If many years ago, Feller and I were in a Sunday school class that was in the church called Word of Grace. I think maybe the Hines at least knew about that Sunday school class. And it was a class that functioned in many ways like this, but it was more, it was different. Anyway, there was a lot of activities in that class that were oriented around do something together with your family right now at the moment. And so they'd give you these round tables and they say, go to these tables and work on this project with your family. And the project that the teacher gave us that day was write out a mission for your family. It's like, okay, great. I don't know if you can picture this, but you have a room a bit smaller than this one, with 50 people in it, three quarters of which are under the age of 12. and so there's a lot of stuff going on. Right, and they give you crayons. This is the way Jonathan Lambrose did things those days. They gave you crayons and a big poster, big butcher paper, and said, "Go." And you have 10 minutes or 12. I don't know. Maybe feeling generous. Such a huge job in 12 minutes. And I remember Valerie and I. We just prayed, and I can't remember exactly how it came, but just like one after the other, God just kind of laid out what we were all about in 10 to 12 minutes, and we wrote it down there, and he said, like, color it and make it fancy, and it was one of those moments in the presence of Jesus for us, because it stood the test of time, and we have this, actually, the same paper that is hanging next to our stairway at home. I know some of you have seen it. We rolled it up and kept it for many years, and we said, we're just going to get that out because that's still at the heart of what we monks are. Over the years, time after time, as I personally have prayed, What is it I'm supposed to be focusing on, supposed to be doing? He takes me back to some aspect of that same mission. So as you're searching for what mission God has for you, if there is something like that, seems like every time I go to God and ask him what I'm supposed to be doing, he brings up this or some aspect of this or some version of this. If you have one of those in your life, start there. There's probably a reason why he does it. Start there and look at how does that fit. I'm going to encourage you to look for something that have a local effect, a local impact. There are some big causes that are really good to get involved in, but they are difficult to figure out your day-to-day life based on the big cause. And so please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be involved in these big causes. I'm encouraging you to look more specifically at what is your place, what is it that you can do in areas where you can actually influence it. Things that you can do that influence people in your life that you talk to every day. Things that you can do to make life better for people around you. What is your piece of this mission? So, for example, large causes like eliminating abortion or eliminating human trafficking or its evil cousin pornography are things that we all could be part of. And they're difficult things to drive your day-to-day life because they're huge causes. I just lost. Oh, I'm back. Okay. It's like God gave Nehemiah and the children of Israel the job of building the wall. That's the big cause, and it's a wonderful cause, and that's something everyone should be a part of. But when you're thinking of a family that's living in a little rock hut or whatever it is they lived in inside the city, and when they get up in the morning, what is it that gets them out of bed? What is it that drives them? Well, I think it's something more personal, something more specific, something more, you know, drilled down to them that they would be thinking of, and then they would also be part of the bigger picture. Hopefully I'm making sense out of that. Look for something that affects the people in your world, your brothers, sisters, parents, children, close friends, employees, company, customers, things like this. Look for things that you can do every day and succeed at it. God will give you something that you can succeed at. Otherwise, he wouldn't give it to you. I mean, I really don't think God, when we ask him what to do, he comes up with something and says, here, you can try it this. It's never going to work, but you're going to become a better person by trying. I really don't think he thinks that way. When Jesus sent the disciples to Jesus, he told them to fill up a bunch of pots with water. Not a difficult thing to do, but they probably hadn't thought of it. And it wasn't that it was so hard. It was the knowing what to do. That's the piece they didn't know. Look for something that is consistent with the rest of your responsibilities that God gave you. Many times, missions there's like a part in our heart that always wanted to do something, but because of the way your life went, it's not practical for you. And when I start searching for vision, those inevitably come up. Look for something that is consistent with the rest of what you are. You're a husband and father of a family. It should be consistent with that. You're in school, and God gave you a mission to do something, you know, to do some degree program or do some whatever. And unless he takes that away from you, then the mission he's going to give you should be consistent with what else he told you to do. Look for that. I'm not saying God can't change what you're doing, but look for something that's consistent with everything else that he told and the responsibilities that you have. I think God has a mission and a plan for every one of you. And today I'm encouraging us to just dig in and to find it. There's always something that people have for you to focus on. But God has something for you to focus on. Not every crisis is your crisis. Not every good cause is your cause for right now. Keep looking for the main thing, for your main thing. And I think God will give it to you. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for this story and the messages that it has that seem so clear for us today. God, I pray that you will give us a perspective and a vision on what you're doing, what you're giving us to do and to accomplish, and for what you want us to focus on today and in these times and in the days and months to come. I pray that you would give us your perspective and your vision. You would help us to be your light right here at this time and these days, that we would carry your light to the place that you gave us to carry it, that we would understand what we are about and what we are to do, and that you would give us success. That you would give us success, that your mission, that your purposes wouldn't fail. In Jesus' name, I pray. Amen. If you have anything